Welcome to season 3 of You're Not Alone with Tansen. My name is Tansen, and if you've followed my journey, you know that I'm not only a musician, but I'm also a mental health advocate. I use my platform to help spread awareness, love, build community, and simply help people feel less alone in their struggles. In the last couple of years, I've had the chance to interview people from all over the world about a huge variety of mental health topics, and I cannot thank each of you enough for helping us continue to shine a light on the world. Every other week this season, we're bringing you the best interviews we've had. Make sure to like and follow this podcast if you're enjoying it. And if you want to keep up with everything we've got going, follow us on socials at Tansen T Music. Hope you enjoy. What is up, everybody? It is Tansen. Thank you so much for tuning in to You're Not Alone with Tansen. I'm so excited. Once again, this is a topic that I've really been diving into and reading more about. I find it extremely infatuating. Honestly, there's so much more that we could learn about it. And I found Daniel, of course, on social media. I loved how transparent he was. So today we're going to be chit-chatting about schizophrenia. And I feel like it's a topic that isn't discussed much. And I feel like we really need to shine a light on it. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad to be on. Thank you.
Absolutely. I always love to have my guests kind of introduce themselves. So share your age, where you're located, your job, whatever you'd like my listeners to know about Daniel.
Sure. So my name is Daniel. I'm currently living in Rocky Mount, Virginia. It's a little small town just south of Roanoke. I live and work on a farm. I'm 32 years old, currently unemployed. I'm taking a gap year just to take some time off, just to do some traveling and maybe better myself a little bit before I jump back into the workforce in the fall. So that's me.
Hey, I love it. I love it. I'm in awe of work hands, like farm hands, because that is one of the hardest jobs ever. Like, you wake up before all the animals in nature wake up and you go to bed like after everybody else. So props for that for sure.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So we're just going to dive right in if that's cool. So you were diagnosed with schizophrenia. And like I said, on social media, you were really transparent about it. And you hopped on there and you were kind of like, hey, this is what's going on. And this is me. And I love that you did that. When did you receive that diagnosis?
It was 4.5 years ago. Maybe 4.75. It was June of 2019. So we're coming up on 5 years that I've been diagnosed.
So really not that long in the grand scheme of things.
No, not that long at all.
Okay. So I would love to hear it from your voice. How would you actually define schizophrenia for people that would understand it?
Yeah, sure. So schizophrenia is a mental illness. It's also considered a brain disease because this is something that there's chemically or physically something wrong with the brain. This isn't like a thought disorder or a personality disorder. This is caused by like an imbalance of neurotransmitters or something like that. So when you think about schizophrenia, the leading theory has to do with dopamine and serotonin levels. They think that that may be contributing to what causes psychosis, which we'll get into that in a minute, I believe. So schizophrenia is characterized by delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech and thoughts, disorganized behavior, and negative symptoms. So you'll hear negative and positive symptoms in schizophrenia sometimes. So positive symptoms are symptoms that add to the experience. So think positive plus add. So that's things like delusions and hallucinations. That's adding to the experience of an individual. And then you have negative symptoms. So think negative minus takeaway. So those are things that take away. So like depression takes away happiness. Something called anhedonia takes away joy. Avolition takes away motivation. So if you ever hear positive and negative symptoms referenced in that way, just think of it in that frame of mind. But those are the characteristic symptoms of schizophrenia. It is in the DSM, so it is an actual diagnosable thing. I think that about sums it up. That's the technical part of it anyway.
Yeah, so a brain disease or a brain disorder, that's really interesting. Also, I find it intriguing that those are called positives because they're not necessarily like, when you think positive, you think, oh, good things, but it just means it's adding something, right?
Yeah, that was something I learned very early on was positive is not necessarily good.
That is interesting. Okay, I've already learned something and we're like 30 seconds into that. That's really intriguing. Okay, very good. So did this diagnosis totally catch you off guard or did you get it and think, okay, that totally makes sense. That kind of puts pieces together for me.
A little bit of both. So when I was diagnosed, I started having symptoms in April. So my diagnosis was in June. So having symptoms in April, it did kind of come up very suddenly and it was very sudden onset. And so it did kind of catch me off guard because all of a sudden I was like, what's going on? Why am I not functioning. Right. Why am I seeing things that aren't there? Why am I hearing things that aren't there? Why is this happening? But I made an appointment to see my primary care doctor, and then she referred me to a psychiatrist. So by the time I got the diagnosis, I was like, okay, that makes sense. But when it first started happening, I was definitely like, something's wrong.
This right. is not well, okay. Yeah, I imagine so. So what does that put you at, like 27 when you got diagnosed?
Yep, 27. Yep.
Okay, very good. Is it typical for people to wait until their 20s and 30s to get a diagnosis? Or do
yeah, so the Mayo Clinic says mid to late 20s for a diagnosis. Symptoms can often start as young as adolescence. I actually had a symptom when I was a teenager. I had delusion that I was the Antichrist, and that went unnoticed for 10 years until I was actually diagnosed.
Are you enjoying this conversation? This project is funded by patrons and sponsors, so if you like what you hear and you'd like to help us continue changing lives in 2024, we would love to have you join the family. Reach out to us at TownsendTMusic@hotmail.com if you'd like to be a sponsor, or hop on patreon.com/TownsendTMusic to join the patron family. As a thank you, you're going to receive extra podcast questions and content every episode, discounts, exclusive content, and so much more. So join the family and let's continue changing lives.
In that way, symptoms can present earlier, but diagnosis usually happens mid to late 20s. At least according to the Mayo Clinic, there's some conflicting theories there, but I just go based on what the Mayo Clinic says.
Sure, sure. So you were talking about when you were a teenager, you had delusions that you were the Antichrist. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yep. I had that delusion.
Family was just like, okay.
No, I didn't tell anyone.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
So it's what we would call like a minor delusion. It wasn't very impactful in my day-to-day life. It was kind of something that was just in the back of my mind. I never told anyone about it. I think delusions don't get mentioned a lot. Like when someone develops a delusion, I think the brain protects itself from that cognitive dissonance, which is what happens when, you know, reality and perception don't line up. You get cognitive dissonance. So I think the brain tries its best to protect you from that. And that's why I never brought it up, because it didn't want to deal with that. That's just a personal theory. Nothing based in science or anything. That's just a personal theory. But so I didn't tell anyone about it. And then when I was diagnosed at 27, I remember just looking through, when we were first talking about maybe this is schizophrenia, and I'm just looking through symptoms of schizophrenia, and an Antichrist delusion is very common amongst people with schizophrenia. And so that was one on the list of common delusions. I was like, oh my goodness, I have like, that delusion.
That
and it just clicked in my head right then and there. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people, they either think they're the Antichrist, or they quite literally think God has appointed them to be God on earth. I see
yes.
that pretty common, like polar opposite things.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And what I think is really peculiar is when an atheist gets a delusion like that. Like I have a Christian religion background. So for me to think I'm the Antichrist kind of goes against my belief system as a Christian. But at the same time, at least it makes sense. But when you have an atheist who does not believe in God at all, believing that they are like one of my followers believes he was the Archangel Gabriel, an atheist believing that he was an angel. That's fascinating to me. I can't understand how that happens.
Right. That's actually pretty cool. I feel like there's a lot to go into that. That's pretty cool. Were there other things that you had noticed other than having a delusion of being an Antichrist? Was there something like, what led you to the doctor, should I say?
So my first symptoms was hearing voices in my head, which I didn't realize was a hallucination. Like many people, I thought hallucinations only happen outside the head, like hearing voices in your ear, but you can actually have internal hallucinations, which is like hearing voices in your head. I didn't know that, so I wasn't able to peg them as hallucinations. I thought I just couldn't control my thoughts. I thought I was going through a really stressful time in my life. So I thought I just couldn't control my thoughts, thought it was anxiety, thought I needed a Xanax, and I was going to be fine. I also developed a stutter at the same time. So those were my first two symptoms that really hit me. And then I went to my primary care doctor and explained to her what was going on. She was like, I think we need to see a psychiatrist.
Interesting. Well, it's almost, you would feel like, okay, there's a lot of self-talk here. Because
we
really, as humans, we do a lot of talking up here.
Exactly.
I feel like that'd be hard to figure out.
It was very noticeable. I will say that when you hear voices in your head, when you hear hallucinations in your head, they sound kind of different than a thought. But in the moment, not knowing that it was a hallucination, like I said, I just thought it was just rampant thoughts that I needed to get a grip on. But
interesting.
My doctor disagreed.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Everything you're saying, I'm like, would I notice that? I'm not sure. That's
oh, really you would.
Interesting. Okay. You okay, definitely well, thanks for would. Making me feel better. I'm like, do I think that? I don't know. Okay, yeah. So something that you mentioned at the very beginning was something called psychosis. And I'd love to chat about that for a little bit, because if anybody's looked into schizophrenia or any major diagnosis that has to do with your brain, psychosis is something you're going to see quite a bit. So what does that look like? Or maybe kind of try to describe that for us. You're welcome to talk about if you ever went through like psychosis personally, or you can define it, whichever way you want to go about that.
Yeah, so psychosis is a syndrome. It just means it's a collection of symptoms. So psychosis tends to mean delusions and hallucinations. That's the most common factors you're going to see under psychosis. So you can get diagnosed with just acute psychosis in the same way you can get diagnosed with a cough. Just because you have a cough doesn't mean you have COVID. Just because you have psychosis doesn't mean you have schizophrenia. It's just a symptom. So it's really important to remember that, because a lot of people ask, have you ever experienced psychosis? Well, yeah, it's a symptom of my condition. But, you know, people ask, well, what's the difference between psychosis and schizophrenia? Well, they're kind of the same thing. Psychosis is a symptom of schizophrenia. So it's important to get that distinction in there before you go any further. But yeah, so for me, psychosis means the hearing voices in my head, hearing people outside my room at night, walking down the hallway, opening and closing my door. It also means the times I've had visual hallucinations. It includes my three major delusions that I've had. So psychosis can really be very expansive or very inclusive in all the symptoms that they can cover. But yeah, I think that's where I'll end that thought, was it can be very inclusive in the symptoms that it can cover.
Yeah, I love that you clarified that, because I have heard of people, especially women that are like super overwhelmed. And I just use this term because this is one I know personally, woman that was super overwhelmed with motherhood and just like a lot going on. And so there was almost like a break. And so they called it a psychosis, but it didn't necessarily mean she had schizophrenia. So just went to the hospital, got that taken care of, and then got out of that episode. So I'm really glad you clarified that those are two separate things, but it goes with schizophrenia. Right?
Yeah, they go with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, very cool. I love that. Is that something that's hereditary?
Kind of. So it's what we say when we talk about schizophrenia and hereditary, we say that there's a genetic predisposition, which just means if someone in your family has schizophrenia, you're more likely to develop it. So it's a little bit loose. It's not as solid as having a Punnett square. It's not saying it always skips a generation. It's not saying that it goes from aunt to nephew. None of those things are said, but it's just if someone else in your family has schizophrenia, you're more likely to develop it. How much more likely? Not sure. They're just not sure what that could mean. But my father had schizophrenia, so there's definitely a hereditary component there. And once I figured out he had schizophrenia, it was very much so a click into place for me as far as solidifying the diagnosis. You know, I pretty much accepted I have schizophrenia. And then when I found out he also has schizophrenia, I was like, yep. That's it. That just checks the final box for me. I'm definitely thinking schizophrenia is the right diagnosis. But yeah, so it's nothing that's solid that you can like chase down genetics. There's not a known gene map that can show you it. There's no blood test that can tell you, but there is definitely some kind of genetic component there, but it's still a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to be like that for a lot of diagnoses that have to do with mental health. And again, why I do this podcast, I feel like we're learning a lot more about it, but we're just not quite there. So I love spreading awareness. Now, this is getting kind of personal, but did you grow up with your father? Like, were there things that you noticed that he did? Like,
no,
was he in the picture?
No, he was not in the picture. He left when I was 6 and died when I was 9. And so I never really got to know him. And I didn't know anyone on that side of my family, actually. And so when I was going through the diagnosis process, in between when I saw my doctor in May and when I saw my psychiatrist in June and trying to put pieces together, I talked to my family on my mother's side and said, hey, do you know anything about my dad having any kind of mental illness? And they said, well, he took Haldol, which back in the day to treat anything, it was Haldol. That was pretty much the only option you had. So they knew that there was something, but didn't know what it was. And then by happenstance, I found an aunt of mine on my father's side, found her on Facebook. And before I even brought up schizophrenia, I was just like, hey, I don't even know if I'm related to you or not, but I think I am. I found her name in an obituary. So I was like, I don't even know if you're who I think I am, but my name's Daniel, and I think you might be my aunt. I was wondering if you knew anything about my father. And she immediately shared that he had schizophrenia. And so I was like, okay, so that confirmed it for me.
Wow. Like, props to you for doing your homework.
I know.
It was, like, I'm really so impressed by that.
I was so glad I found that obituary that had a list of like all the surviving family. I was like, I can find these people.
Wow. That's so cool. It's like you did a 24 and me like by yourself. Like,
I know, right?
Version. Look at you being a little detective. That's really cool. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I love that. I feel like, okay, so something I have found for other people, like people with anxiety or people with narcissism or something like that, a lot of times there are triggers. Do you feel like there are triggers for you that maybe, you know, if this happens, I'm going to have more delusions later or something like that, just something that triggers your symptoms?
Yeah, so I think anytime you're not taking care of your body, you're not taking care of your brain. So if I'm not getting enough sleep, if I'm not eating right, if I'm not exercising, all those tend to trigger more psychosis for me. Then there's a couple very specific things like glowing eyes freak me out. cannot handle glowing eyes in the dark. They just freak me out. But so I don't know if I'd call that a trigger as much as it is just like maybe a phobia that kind of spirals sometimes. But other than that, yeah, definitely stress, anxiety, anything like that, I can usually count on experiencing more voices and hallucinations if I'm in a stressful time.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Absolutely. Are there different types of schizophrenia or are there different severities? Like, I know a lot of diagnoses, they have type 1 or type 2, and they kind of break it into categories. Does schizophrenia fall into that?
It used to, not too long ago in the DSM-4. The DSM is the manual for diagnosing mental illnesses. So the DSM-4, which was the the DSM-4R, I guess, which is where they rewrote part of it, used to have different categories of schizophrenia. I think there was 5 and I can't remember them off the top of my head. I'm not going to try.
Yeah, let's
But so there used to be like 5 different categories. Like one was catatonic, one was paranoid, one was hebephrenic, one was unspecified, and one was something. I can't remember what the 5th one was. But they don't have that anymore in the new DSM. The DSM-5 got rid of those different classifications. And now it's just you have a diagnosis of schizophrenia, a blanket diagnosis. So there aren't different types anymore, but a lot of people who were diagnosed before that, before the DSM came out, you know, still hold on to their type as their diagnosis. So you will still hear people introduce themselves and saying, I'm a paranoid schizophrenic. I have hebephrenic schizophrenia. So you may still hear people refer to that just out of being kind of grandfathered in, I guess is the term we would use. And then other different severities. Clinically, no, there's not a like chart or anything. There's nothing in your, when you see a psychiatrist, they're going to say you have a level 3 schizophrenia. They're not going to do that. But practically, of course, there's a severity. There's always going to be people who can function extremely well on very little intervention. And you're going to have people who can't function at all, even on heavy intervention. So there's always going to be that severity scale in practice, even if it's not there in the actual diagnosis process.
Yeah, very good. You do a great job explaining.
I'm a teacher.
Oh, no kidding. That makes so much sense. I'm like just listening. I'm like, God, I could listen to you talk about this all day. And yeah, you're really great at breaking it down. And I love that. I'm really appreciative of that. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Going back to what you said, you were talking about some people are able to manage it better than others. Let's talk about that for a little bit. So one, is schizophrenia manageable? Like, can you take medication for it? Which is, I know you said earlier back in the day, be Halidol for pretty much everything. What does that look like nowadays, medication-wise? Does therapy help? Like, what helps? What doesn't? Is there help?
Yeah, there's definitely help. Currently, there's a lot of antipsychotics. That's the class of medication that treats schizophrenia and psychosis, antipsychotics. There's a bunch of antipsychotics out there, and they're coming out with new ones all the time. And so there's definitely a lot of work being done there that hasn't been done in the past. Because like you said, and like I said, back in the day, it was Haldol. That was your option. You did Haldol, and you went to your inpatient facility, and that was it. But nowadays, there's a lot more treatment options. There's a lot more treatment plans. We know more about, you know, like certain diets can help more, like a keto diet can help with symptoms. I personally can't follow a keto diet. It's a really difficult diet to follow. So maybe I should give it a try, but I don't.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a lot more treatable and it's definitely manageable. A lot of people just only need to take a medication, just take a pill every day or a shot every 3 to 6 months, and they function just fine. Some of us, like me, I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, I need a higher dose of medication to function. And I take other medications to mitigate like my insomnia so that doesn't impede on my schizophrenia or make my schizophrenia worse, I guess. So Yeah, so it's definitely a lot more treatable than it used to be. There's a lot of hope out there for people who are diagnosed. It used to be a very sad diagnosis. It used to mean that your normal life was over, but that's not the case anymore.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And I said this a little bit earlier, but again, why I love this podcast, mental health has been something I've loved, and it's kind of run in my family. My grandfather was very big on mental health and helping people get those resources.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And he kind of passed that down to me, and it's so cool to see and to hear how much progress we've made. So like you said, and I kind of want to touch on that again, people used to just kind of send you to a psych unit, right?
And that was it.
And it was not a, you know, nowadays you can go and almost do like a detox, like that. It gets a bad rep. So they just send you to a padded wall room and be like, good luck to you. That was like a very grim diagnosis.
Yes. So, yep. And that's what it used to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's so amazing to hear you say, there are lots of ways that you can work through this nowadays. So that's so cool. I love that. Does mental health, like counseling, therapy, do you see a counselor?
I do not see a counselor. I probably should, but I don't.
We all probably should. I was wondering, is there a treatment that could help? Like some people with anxiety do like EMDR or whatever that is referred to, but is there something like that that would be helpful?
Yeah, talk therapy is really helpful for schizophrenia, not only for dealing with the symptoms, but also just for being more open and transparent about your symptoms. I think that's the number one barrier in treatment with schizophrenia, is that sharing our symptoms is really embarrassing, and we've been taught to be ashamed of stuff like this. And so I think talk therapy can be really helpful in getting people the confidence to talk about their symptoms. It took a very long time. I didn't start TikTok immediately after I got my diagnosis. I didn't tell anyone for a whole year. I was so embarrassed and ashamed of it. I told maybe two family members and two friends, and that was it. My very best and my very closest, and that was it. Because I was embarrassed and I was ashamed to tell people that I was hallucinating. And so I think talk therapy can help a lot with that, and can help people do that. And getting your symptoms out there sooner is how you get early intervention, and that's key to success. So if we can learn how to talk about our symptoms openly with someone and have someone check in on us and just say, hey, how are your hallucinations? Do you need to do reality checking with me? Is everything going okay? So that they can be confident in saying, you know what? Actually, I feel like I have been hallucinating a lot more. Would you go with me to the doctor? Because I don't want to go by myself or whatever. That's my perfect world, is that that's the scenario that everyone lives in, that someone checks in on them and that they are open and honest and that they go with them to the doctor if that's what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I think self-awareness is huge too. I love that you're self-aware. Yes. A lot of people are in denial, and I have met people that have diagnoses and they refuse to get the treatment, and that's really hard to deal with as an outsider.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called insider meta-awareness. There's a term for it, for when you're aware that your symptoms are symptoms, especially when concerning psychosis, because for a lot of people, the hallucinations are real. For me, I can tell that they're not real. It's called insight, like I said. For delusions, I don't have that. I don't have that defense. So delusions tend to hit me hard, sink in deep, and cause me a lot of problems. But hallucinations, I can tell that they're not real, but not everyone can do that for everything.
Interesting. Okay. That's good to know. I did not know that. So you just kind of have that instinct to be able to differentiate real versus unreal with the hallucinations.
Yeah, for hallucinations. Okay. Anyway, okay. Yeah.
And some people just don't have that.
Some people don't. It's completely real to them.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I could see where that would be really hard to seek help in that situation. Goodness gracious. What's something I am sure going through life, especially after your diagnosis, and you were talking about, it's scary to tell people. You don't even want to admit that you have it. What's something you wish people did know about schizophrenia?
I think it's because schizophrenia, like we said way earlier, is that it gets a bad rap. It gets a poor portrayal in the media. And people with schizophrenia are made out to be violent or unstable or dangerous, or insert synonym here. And that's just not the case. That's really not the case at all. And again, like we talked about, when the severity, I'm not saying there aren't cases out there, but it really is rare that you have someone whose schizophrenia leads to violence. I think in order for someone's schizophrenia to lead to violence, a lot of safeties and a lot of barriers got broken down to get there. I think that there was cascading failures where they didn't get the help they needed for such a long time. And so that's why, again, why it's so important to talk about symptoms, be open about it. I think that the people that we do see who go off the edge a little bit, not saying that flippantly, but who do that, they were failed somewhere. I really do believe that. I believe that someone failed them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that could go hand in hand with a lot of these diagnoses. I feel like
yeah.
they just kind of slip through the fingers, through the cracks a little bit. Sadly,
yeah,
I hate that.
I agree.
Yeah. Do you know, I know we didn't really talk about this previously, but do you know any statistics as far as how many people are diagnosed or how common schizophrenia actually is?
I think it's 1 in 100, if I remember right. I think it's 1 in 100. It's a little bit more common than I thought it was the last time I checked. It's either 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000. It's not super common.
Yeah.
And I think another reason why people think it's not super common is like, Something I really like to say to people is that you know someone who takes an antipsychotic, whether you realize it or not, and you almost certainly know someone who takes an antipsychotic for some reason, and you probably know someone who has schizophrenia and you don't know it. Right. Now, with me, I'm very open about it. So, of course, people are going to know that that I have schizophrenia because I've built a whole platform off of it. I always wager that people know someone who takes antipsychotics for some reason or another, and they just don't know it because most of us lead fairly normal, low profile lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And there shouldn't be that bad rep on everybody, right? Like,
exactly.
He's got a mental health. Yeah, we all have something. And I think the conversations about it are super important. So again, thank you for having your platform. That's how I found you. And I wanted to help share your story. I think it's incredible.
And I appreciate
brave.
It.
Yeah. Just incredibly brave and everything else. What does self-care look like for you? How does Daniel feel like Daniel?
Well, working on the farm helps a lot, doing the farm stuff. Thankfully, I don't have to get up before the crack of dawn.
Oh, you're like the only farmer I've ever met that has it.
Someone else takes care of the morning part. I do the evening part. But taking care of the animals and just being with them is really therapeutic. We have horses. That's our primary animal that we have. We have 7 horses. And so taking care of them is really therapeutic. Just I don't know a whole lot about taking care of them yet. I'm still learning the ropes about that, literally learning the ropes. I don't know how to use a halter yet. I'm learning, but we're not there yet.
Okay.
But most of them are very easily just you brush them and they'll sit still. You don't need a halter for them. But so just working on the farm helps a lot. And then doing stuff that keeps me distracted, like play video games, read books, take naps, just stuff like that that keeps me distracted. And that helps with my schizophrenia as well. It's self-care, but also staying distracted and focused helps.
Absolutely. A horse farm literally sounds amazing.
It's a lot of fun. They're funny. They're funny animals.
I love that so much. That is so cool. Okay. So where did you find, you were talking about, I mean, you did your homework going through your family and like trying to figure things out. When you were going through this to begin with, where did you find the most support or the most information about schizophrenia? Like, where were you like, okay, this is where I learned the most?
Probably, and I don't think that the website still exists. I tried to look for it before again, and I couldn't find it, but it was schizophrenia.org was where I read a lot about all the symptoms and started checking boxes there. But it seemed to me last time I tried to go to that website, it wasn't the same website that I went to before. So I don't know if I've gotten the website wrong or if they've changed. Unfortunately, the internet was a really big source. I also went to school for this. My undergraduate degree is in psychology and my master's degree is in human services counseling. So I've studied it before, but it is a matter of if you don't use it, you lose it. So I'm sure I knew enough about schizophrenia to pass a test in my junior year of college, but since I didn't use that knowledge, it kind of got left behind.
Right. Well, I can only imagine. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Okay. So you have a background of mental health. So that's intriguing. Also why you can explain it so well.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Very cool. Daniel, thank you so much for being so open and like hopping on here. I know you're busy with the farm and everything. It means
no worries. Happy to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, listeners, you know how this works. Daniel and I are going to keep talking. We're actually going to get a little bit more personal, but it's going to be for my patrons only. So this podcast keeps going. This whole project runs on sponsors and it runs on Patreon. So if you want to keep this conversation going and this whole project going, log on to patreon.com/TownsendTeamMusic. We're going to go over there and chit chat a little bit more. If not, we will catch you next time.
If you'd like to hear the rest of this interview, visit patreon.com/TownsendTeamMusic. And don't forget, you can also watch the interviews on our YouTube channel at Townsend Team Music YouTube.
If you're looking to buy or sell, I have the perfect realty company for you. Clark & Co. Realty is located in the Benton, Bryant, Arkansas area. And they understand that buying or selling a home is more than just a transaction. It's a life-changing experience. That's why their team of highly seasoned real estate professionals is dedicated to providing exceptional, personalized services for all their clients. They truly take great pride in the relationships they build, and they always work relentlessly on the client's behalf to help them achieve their perfect real estate goals. They always have the client in mind, and I can speak firsthand when I say how reliable, trustworthy, and quick they were. When I was looking to buy my first home, they were there with me every step of the way, answering every question I could think of. They showed me a great amount of knowledge and patience through the process. It's no wonder they've won so many awards for their outstanding services and their excellent relationships with clients. So if you're looking to buy or sell, there is no better option than Clark & Co. Realty.